Welcome, it's SB Pod. My guy Stanford Steve, set up in the Stanford Steve Estates, adjacent to the Falls Road Golf Course. Shout out to Falls Road again.
They're out there today. That's I just got back from the park, and it's windy. Conditions aren't great, and those maniacs are out there hitting a little white ball.
Yeah, I got a tweet from somebody at Falls Road. They're just very excited we're talking about them.
I'll be over for a couple beers this weekend, Falls Road.
It's a public golf course here in Montgomery County near where Steve lives, and the people – there's no snow on the ground here, and so people are out playing. You got shots up today? How many did you make?
We got shots
up. Wait. Let me guess. Over – and Steve shoots –
rough conditions.
Okay, Steve shoots 100 free throws a day. He makes fun of people that are out there playing golf. He goes and shoots on a chain basket.
I need to get outside. Let's just put it that way.
All right. The fact that you said it's rough really conditions, rough. That means the number starts with a 6 today. That means you made 65.
No, 72.
Ooh. So your baseline.
Yeah, take it.
Your baseline.
We keep. I texted you last week. We keep tinkering with the release because we have to adjust to the elements. Like, the ball has to be higher with the wind.
Yep.
Because, I mean, I'll tell you, this is one thing I was thinking about. You want to, like, I'm out there by myself. It's 30-something degrees out. Wind's blowing. And I'll tell you, a real helpless feeling is when you see the net blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
It's really, really intimidating. Intimidating.
Youngsters out there listening to the pod, I want you to really think about this conversation. This guy talking was a 5-star high school recruit, an All-American athlete. His last game he played in his career was the Rose Bowl. And this is what he is reduced to. Shooting 100 free throws on a 30-degree windy day in the winter. That's all he has left. And right now you're like, you're washed. And he is. And I'm more washed than him. But here's the thing. Someday you will be washed too. Okay? So there's a little pick-me-up.
Yeah.
There's a little pick-me-up to get the podcast started, thinking about how washed we all are.
Mm.
Also want to let you know of a new podcast, First Take, Her Take. Give that a listen and subscribe to that, along with SV Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. Super Bowl 55, giddy up. We've got Mahomes and Brady. You got Kansas City, Tampa Bay, first ever home team, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's not going to feel the same because it's not really home. There'll be some fans there, but it's not what it would be otherwise.
Mm.
It's a rematch of a game where Tyreek Hill, I think, had 700 receiving yards in the first quarter. They just torched that Buccaneer secondary. What's my guy, 24? Carlton Davis, right? Really good corner. Loves to talk some junk. Michael Thomas didn't have a catch against him. Tyreek Hill lit him up like a Christmas tree. Not just him, that whole Buccaneer secondary got worked.
15 targets in that game. 15 targets.
Yeah. Well, you know what it is? I think, and you know better just having lived it, but like the whole, like I think offensive coordinators, I think you get too tricky. Like I think you spend all week long and you try to figure out all these plays. Like that just felt like a game where it's like playing Madden or playing NCAA 14 where you're just like, all right, they can't stop this play. We're running this play again. Why try to be smart? Why try to be more clever than we need to be? Just throw it to 10, right? That's what they did all that whole game.
No doubt. It's looking back at the last game. I remember that, you know, they obviously jumped out on them and Kansas City did some things. I've seen some telestrations on, you know, how Mahomes did it with his eyes and what Tampa was trying to do defensively. Listen, I couldn't have been more wrong in the conference championship games because I thought the teams that lost the previous game, they were both rematches, as is this one, as you mentioned.
Yep.
I thought they would get something out of it. I thought the Packer game was just based on turnovers in the first time with Tampa and they would play better. They didn't. And I thought Buffalo being able to see that Kansas City offense and knowing what they could expect the next time and having Milano back, I thought that would help them, knowing how good McDermott is. And I thought they would do something to take away Kelce, try and double him. He went off in the first half. He set the tempo
nine
there.
Catches.
So
nine first half catches.
This is interesting. I do like the idea of how well Tampa's pass rushing has been. JPP, Shaq Barrett have been tremendous. Vita Vea,
he's a difference maker, man. That guy's an animal in the middle. You're not dealing with him. And your favorite player on their defense?
Oh, 45 is incredible. I will say Todd Bowles, this is why I lean Tampa right now, is with Vita Vea back, that guy could just occupy blockers and Bowles could get really creative. We all know he likes to blitz. He's going to come at him. And I think, you know, hearing Romo do the games, I think he's right. Like the way Cleveland did it, you can't let him sit back there. You can't cover these guys. So I think the idea to make him get rid of it. And on the other side, I really think the unsung heroes of this playoffs have been the Tampa Bay offensive line. You go back to the Washington game, they were tremendous. They ran all over them. Washington never had a chance defensively in that game. I know Heinicke was the story coming out, but when you go back and watch that Tampa Bay's offensive line, same thing against New Orleans, who might have, you know, the best front seven there is. And now here comes Kansas City. So I feel like if Tampa's got to win the game, they got to throw it. And you got to like your what you've seen from them being able to protect Brady to give him time, but you don't see it.
Well, if Tampa Bay is going to win, they need Devin White, as great as he is, to come out on a horseback. He likes riding around on horses. Let him patrol the middle on a big-ass steed, some kind of Clydesdale clomping around. I don't know. Like, here's the thing about it. Last week when we were here, I said that Rodgers was in the Matrix, and I just didn't see him losing. And in retrospect, that was such a Mark sucker square-ass position to take. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, the Buccaneers – that game is really, really interesting to dissect. We're Wednesday as we tape this. I don't mm-hmm. want to bore people with the details because everybody in the podcast space has done some version of this. But I think what becomes really easy, and you brought this point up in our show meeting the other day, and it's so true. Like Brady gets credit for the win. All right. He was awesome in the first half. Like legitimately
unreal.
Awesome. And you pointed it out on our show meeting, like that first third down pass to Evans. If you're the Packers, you got to be like, oh, this is what we're doing today. Yeah. And they go right down the field. They score. He's great. Second half, Brady on three consecutive possessions throws it to Green Bay. He was bad in the second half. And you're allowed to say that he was bad because he was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But he gets the win. But why does he get the win? Well, he gets the win in part because they were super aggressive before the half. And they get Miller on a touchdown pass where it looked like they were going to punt. Then they didn't. And how that happens, nobody knows. And then the Buccaneers defense gets back-to-back three and outs against the presumed MVP because they got pressure in part because Green Bay's O-line's missing Bakhtiari and that Buccaneer front is playing at a really high level. And so there's all of these nuanced things. And then it comes down in the end to everybody wants to kill LaFleur for kicking a field goal. And the biggest issue I have with it is that your quarterback has to know in his mind on third down that this is our last down, but he didn't. And you can do that screen grab thing where you're like, well, he would have scored because look at all this open space. He might have. I'm not saying he wouldn't have, but I'm telling you, he might have done something different if he knew in his brain we're kicking a field goal if we don't get this completion, if we don't convert, rather. So, like, in totality, there's so many things that come out of that game that could have changed it, and Tampa was a worthy winner. But the thing about the second game that kind of bums me out is even up 9-0, I just never considered Buffalo had a chance. And that, it's not a problem for the NFL per se, but this Chiefs team, they were bored, it seemed, during the regular season. They let teams hang around and they were winning games, but they were close because maybe they're just like, we got this gear you don't have. But man, they feel like just such a foregone conclusion that they're going to win because they got Mahomes and you don't, and you can't get him off the field. And it's like, oh, Kelsey's open. Okay. Oh, not this time. Tyreek's open. No, not this time. Oh, Mecole, the guy that fumbled the ball.
Yeah.
We'll pitch it to him. We'll let him make plays. We'll underhand toss. Like, it's not a bad thing that they're great. I just think that there's almost like Bama in college football, that there could be a fatigue that it's just hard. I don't know how you beat them. Having said all that, I will have Tampa Bay in the Super Bowl.
No doubt.
Because it's the only thing in my brain I can figure out to do. Because everyone loves the Chiefs, and I'll just talk myself into Tampa Bay because partly Brady and figuring out some things on offense and part of that defense, and plus I'm just an underdog player. I have been forever. but I'm going to do it holding my nose, just like every time I go against Alabama going, well, this is going to suck in the fourth quarter when they've got a lead, because it just feels like they always do. Do you have that same sentiment about not – I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying that the inevitability of them takes the drama out of a lot of these games.
No doubt. You sit back and think, all right, well, how are they going to do it? And then the Hardman story happens. Like I saw somebody say, oh, the Chiefs are so good. Hardman spotted him 6. The Bills couldn't make the extra point, and then he gave him 7 on the long on the touchdown. So it's – to me, I'm with you. It's Tampa. I'll have them. And I've talked about, you touched on the wins thing. There's a hell of a lot of good players on that Tampa roster, man. And the idea that they have, I'm sure Tom's going to tell them, what this is like. I haven't looked at, the Super Bowl experience, what the Buccaneers have. I'm off the top of my head. I can't think of many guys on that roster that have played in the Super Bowl besides him. I'm sure somebody will correct us. Obviously, Kansas City played last year. But this is different, man. The crowd, the aspect, Brady and Arians are smart enough to come up with a game plan of how are they going to do it. They're smart enough to realize what they have to do, knowing what Kansas City is capable offensively. And that's what I think is, as far as a scheme matchup, Tampa is going to be ready in that instance. Whereas I think McDermott, he said it, they're in a different level than us. And it's really different. Obviously, kicking field goals.
We have an elaborate cable package. We saw the game, Coach. We're clued into the difference that there is there.
But everybody, the LaFleur, the field goals, McDermott kicking field goals. Like, it's one thing to say it all the time, and then there's one thing to actually be in that situation and do it. And he did it twice. And I'll guarantee it's a learning experience. Like, it sucks that it was the AFC title game, but now that guy knows. He knows for sure what it's going to be capable of. I also think, as good as Josh Allen was, and that's why another factor I have, it is the trust factor with him. You cannot take – and I know the last one was when the game was over. You can't take 25-yard losses in NFL games. Not even playoff games. Not even games that are going to go to the Super Bowl. You can't do that. He's got to get rid of it. And I'm sure he was awesome after the game. I thought he was great on taking accountability. And it is. It's a learning experience. And it just sucks because the Chiefs, yes, they are that good.
And that's why I said on SportsCenter, as gutting as – and you and I disagree here, and that's fine. As gutting as the loss was for Green Bay, I'd rather be a Green Bay fan after this weekend's game than a Buffalo fan, because as big a step forward as Allen took, and that whole Buffalo team, giant steps forward, AFC East champions, win some playoff games, win tough playoff games, right? Where it wasn't like it wasn't easy, man. Wasn't easy, mm-hmm. But they figured it out. And you get to that spot where it's like, okay, so this is what it takes. The thing that would be so debilitating mentally is your quarterback's 24. Yeah, he's making some steps. That's cool. Mahomes is 25.
Yeah.
Mahomes is 25. Where's he going? Like, you're going to have to deal with that pain in the ass on your side of the draw for the next 15 years, man. And that's a tough answer or riddle to solve for everybody in the AFC. So, but the Bills fans – we praised you guys last week for how awesome you guys are, not the diving on tables and being hammered and all the rest, but for all the philanthropy and all the stuff you do, and you support your guys and you believe in you guys. I'm not trying to tell you guys that all is lost. I'm just saying I would have a hard time convincing myself that we're ever going to figure out how to beat that red team, man. I have a different dude, and their ability to fast break you, their ability to take a double-digit deficit in a game and in like 15 minutes of game time, turn it into a 21-point lead is unmatched, man. They did it at Miami this year. They did it in the playoffs last year over and over and over. And that's the thing that's where it just mentally messes with you. I would have to think that no matter what you do, up 9-0, you've done everything right if you're Buffalo and you're like, yeah, but one play and it's a 2-point lead. And then you're like, okay. And, oh, we're down 14-9. Oh, we're down 21-9.
Take a field goal.
Oh, we drive, but we get close. It's, Why am I talking like Romo right now? But you drive and you get close, you kick a field goal, you kick a field goal. And, you know, like as everybody said, you're not going to beat them kicking field goals. All right, so that's last week. We got nothing this week. Got nothing but time to chew on numbers and props and angles and ways to look at the game. Steve, what do you got for me?
Just looking at the props, William Caesar Hill. Why do I always call it that?
William Caesar's, Hill, Caesars William Hill.
William Hill have just released the first edition of their player props and kind of eye-opening. What do you think Kelce yards is? I'll give you a hint. It's the highest in the game.
105.
Not bad. 97 and a half.
All right.
Tyreek Hill, what did he go for? 700 yards in the first game?
700 in the first quarter. Unofficially.
His over-under.
Go ahead. 80?
88 and a half.
Okay.
Mahomes passing yards?
320.
Not bad. 330 and a half. You're pretty good at this.
I'm not unfamiliar okay, here's with, the question. With the smell of a casino.
Is there any – would you take a shot in anyone else besides either quarterback at MVP?
Yeah. I mean, and again, this is the sucker play because I'm reacting to what most recently happened, but I don't see how you don't just take a small nibble of either Hill or Kelce. I mean, the problem is if like Kelce has the game he had last week and Mahomes had the game he had last week, who'd be the MVP, Mahomes or Kelce? You know what Kelce. I mean? You think?
I do.
The problem is it's such a quarterback award. It's kind of yeah, like the quarterback. It's like the Heisman is typically a quarterback trophy. You know, this
Mahomes
year.
Is minus 120 to win MVP.
Right, so there's no like you know the old buzzword of the moment with gambling value. Well, there's no value in taking that, but I mean, why not take a swing at Kelce or Hill?
Yeah, just looking at these, I look at Tampa.
What's the get back on Hill? What do you get for 100? What do you get plus one?
Tyreek Hill's plus 1300.
What are you kidding? Like you don't just put a black chip on that and try to win 1300. Let's go.
Remember when you gave that guy a black chip at the casino in Vegas?
I did. Let me give folks the Cliffs notes on that. It's a story from many, many, many years ago in the Hard Rock when the Hard Rock was. And when the Hard Rock was what it was, there was nothing close.
Nothing better.
True or false?
True.
That place was madness.
Oh, purple table fell on the tables.
People were out of their minds. Okay, so I'm having the weekend of my life. I am not going to lose a bet. I have been killing everything on the table. And I'm watching the Bills play the Vikings. It's a game that ends up going to overtime. Who is that kicker from Cal? God, he made a 50-something yard field goal for Minnesota.
Brian Longwell?
No, somebody, Brian. Isn't that his name? Something Brian. Travis, look this up while I'm telling this story. It's like it's the Vikings and the Bills, and like Peerless Price scores a touchdown in overtime.
Flutie Flakes quarterbacking,
and I win. Okay, I win everything. I got everything parlayed, tied in, and I win. I win it all.
Teaser.
I think we weren't going strictly sucker type bets. We were going, let's push the table max because we're up. So we're watching in the sports book, and the sports book there actually wasn't very good because it wasn't set up to be a sports book. Nope. We were watching the game, and a dude full on Zubas, Viking Zubas, hammered like mullet, bad goatee, the whole bit. Like the cliche of the guy that you just don't want to be next to when he's rooting against you. And he's pulling for the Vikings. I've got the Bills. And the Bills were like, I want to say they were plus 4, whatever it was. Like the threat of overtime was the only thing that could hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
And we go to overtime. And this guy's loud clapping and screaming, and he sucks, and everybody hates him. And finally, I'm just like, hey, man.
The whole game.
Well, I mean, we weren't watching an entire game. We were watching long enough that – and you know me, Steve, my tolerance for people like this in situations like this, 1 to 10.
Not zero. Great.
Zero,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, not great.
Thanks. I go to the guy and I finally, I'm like, hey, man, how much do you have on this game? He's like, $50. What's it to you? And I take a black chip, which at the Hard Rock was $100, and I put it in front of him. And I said, "You just won your bet. Now shut the f- up." And everyone in our proximity just starts cheering. Now, in retrospect, that's not the nicest way to handle it, but it felt good at the moment. And if you're that guy, you have to just throw the chip at me and punch me. You can't just take that. He took the chip and walked. As it turned out, he didn't win the bet. I did, because Buffalo covered in overtime. And that was one of the greatest gambling weekends
ever
of my entire life.
And that's not even a garbage bag one, right?
That was a different trip. That's the greatest Vegas comeback in history, where we were broke and had to spend an entire week there. We'll tell that some other time. But that was the you won your bet. Shut the up. Sorry.
I'm just looking at the Buccaneers side of things here with the props. I look at Godwin. To me, he's Brady's guy. He's over 5.5 catches. He had like 9 targets, I want to say, the last 2 weeks. They line him up more than Evans. Evans seems to be outside. You know what we like, what he likes to use him in the red zone. I would take a shot with Godwin over 5.5 catches here. I think that's definitely worthy.
Okay.
And I'm just trying to make Mike Evans is 4.5 catches. So I think Tampa's got to throw to win. So I would take both those overs right there.
I like it.
I don't have a number yet, my man. Brate, that's some bullshit.
Well, get on it. That was your best bet. That was your over best bet, that you over 2.5 catches. He had that and a tutter. No big deal. No, by the way, it was Doug Bryan was the kicker. I'm looking.
Doug Bryan.
The Bills beat the Vikings 45-39 in overtime.
Travis's internet must be down.
That's fine.
I literally just got it as he said it.
Yeah, listen, sure.
I'll host and do research. You just sit there and. Do whatever you do on your couch. No one cares.
Drew Bledsoe threw for 463 yards and 3 touchdowns.
I would not have been able to remember that Drew Bledsoe was a quarterback, but I knew it was Peerless Price, and I knew Doug Bryan. And what's nuts is Doug Bryan like missed a bunch of extra points in the game, which allowed that 50-something yard field goal. How long was the field goal he made at the end? 50. Oh, I got it wrong. It was Buffalo's kicker made a field goal at the end to force overtime. Mike Hollis from 54 yards. But the reason that the field goal mattered at all is because Doug Bryan had missed a bunch of extra points earlier in the game. Whatever. I gave a guy a black chip. I wasn't very nice about it. I won. Hooray. Steve's.
So did he. He won too.
You're exactly right. But that was 20 years ago. Steve's giving you current props to bet on this Super Bowl.
We're trying. I also did a little homework assignment. You did notes last week. You know, there's been some voices as we switch over to college hoops here.
Some voices
about, you know, Big 10, Big 12
chatter,
Big 10, who's better. And so I went through and I did the old SVP and Russillo, what conference is better challenge style, where we, you know, set it up in a head to head matchup. I have bad news though. Because the way I do this is when I go conference head to heads, I take out, like, you know, obviously the Big 10 has 14 teams. And the Big 12 has 10, which is just awesome. Maryland didn't make the cut. We took out the bottom four right now, the current standings in the Big 10. So Maryland, well, Northwestern, Penn State, and Nebraska did not make it. Where I'll start this.
Okay, so then I immediately have no interest in the rest of this little skit of yours.
Yeah, but you're Big 10, Scotty.
But if Maryland's not interested, I'm really kind of not. Okay, but what do we got?
I took the highest-ranked teams – mm-hmm. from each conference in a head-to-head, just to see what it would look like if the games were played.
Hold on a second. The Big Ten has 14 teams. The Big 12 has 10.
Yep.
Just think about how idiotic that is.
Exactly. That's what I was trying to say.
Big Ten, 14. Big 12, 10. We're poor at math. But the matchups that Stanford Steve has whipped together here, what do we got?
Baylor versus Michigan.
God, that would be a great game. I think Michigan is awesome. But I think Baylor has more adults. They got men, and I think they would D them up. I think Baylor would win the game. I don't know. There might be one team that can beat Baylor.
I wish I had a Michigan future from the beginning.
So do I.
Man.
It would have been long.
Woo! Texas versus Iowa.
Iowa guards no one, but I think offensively they're too much. I think they'd beat Texas.
Oklahoma versus Wisconsin.
Oklahoma just went into Texas and got a win. Kruger's team's better than I thought they'd be.
So is he.
Wisconsin's just like, just, you know, it's just like getting just pounded on. Just body shots. I don't know. You picked this one. I picked the first two.
I think Oklahoma's legit. Wisconsin, too many bad losses to me.
You're saying losing at home to the Dirty Terps is a bad loss?
Yeah. They were. You're a top 10 team, yeah.
Yeah, and you're in like a 10-point favorite.
This right. One's the easiest to me. West Virginia over Illinois.
Illinois's got intriguing talent, but they speaking of a bunch of bad losses, like they just, you know, they have a gear that when they play to it, they'd run West Virginia. But yeah, I mean, I think it'd be hard to take them right now against West Virginia.
This one is easy to me, the Big Ten. Kansas versus Ohio State.
You like Ohio State.
I really do. I think they're the most underrated team in the conference.
I agree with that. Holtman's bunch is I'm a big fan of him as a coach. And I didn't. Hey, Rockhold, you asleep on your couch? We're talking about Ohio State.
I didn't want to talk here and get yelled at by Steve. Game
to Purdue last week.
Oh, Jesus. That was awful.
Purdue made every single play down the stretch. It was amazing.
Yeah, but I like Ohio State in that game.
Yeah, me too. And then Texas Tech, Minnesota. I think Texas Tech.
Texas Tech, yeah. Minnesota cannot shoot the basketball. They've got some huge wins where they have shot it, but they have too many games, like their most recent game, which was a home loss to Maryland, where they and the Terps played phenomenal defense in it. Part of the reason why Minnesota didn't shoot it well was Maryland, but they also have too many games where they can't shoot. I think Texas Tech's better. Are we leaning towards the Big 12's better?
Well, this is that was it, because you had more. But you had more teams from the Big Ten that could win some of those matchups, because the rest of the way, no matter how you look at this, with the bottom four, and you could take the bottom eight from the Big Ten and put them all in there, the Big Ten has the matchup advantage in every single one of these, whether it's Oklahoma State, TCU, Kansas State, and Iowa State. I mean,
yeah, the bottom of their league is struggling.
I have Oklahoma State. I just looked at the conference standing. Oklahoma State versus Purdue. That's not even close.
Nah, TCU, I disagree. Like, is Cade Cunningham playing? Like, Oklahoma State is. They've got some wins now.
I don't know. I think.
Purdue, and look, I'm as good. Big in the tank for Painter as anybody in America. I love that guy's everything he does at Purdue. I love, but I wouldn't make it as blanket a statement as that. But whoever's playing TCU, Iowa State, and Kansas State from the Big Ten is winning.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the Big Ten standings right now, Rutgers is in ninth, Michigan State's 10th, Maryland's 11th.
We didn't even make the cut for your little skit.
I know. You guys would take care of Iowa State and Kansas State, though, if
you were. Thank you. Thanks for that vote of confidence.
Hey, red hot.
But here's the larger point here is that I agree that there's a conversation to be had, because the top of the Big 12 – is really good. And the middle is really good. So I think the issue with the Big Ten is that it's really like Nebraska has struggled and they've been hit by COVID. So they haven't played in quite a while, but you look at even Northwestern has hit a rough patch, but they had some wins early. Oh,
yeah.
Maryland's didn't make the cut here. They've got three road wins against ranked teams this season. Penn State has won the last couple they played. They've been tough in a bunch of games, took Michigan to the wire at their place. The issue is the back end of the Big Ten. It's just hard to find a game where you go, this is a win. I was texting with a couple of coaches from the league, and that was the overarching point. That there's normally some teams you just figure you're going to beat. Like the ones in the Big 12 who are struggling this year. You go, okay, do you ever take something for granted? No, but you probably ought to win. Well, this year in the Big Ten, have fun finding that.
Wow, speaking of a payday in a Big Ten, Pat Fitzgerald just got a 10-year deal.
At Northwestern?
Yeah.
To stay?
Yep.
Okay. How much?
See if he's making as much as you are.
Did you think he was there were a bunch of guys that were on the college scene that were talked about as potential NFL coaches this year. Do you think his approach is a professional approach? Let me frame that. I mean, an approach that would work at the professional level. I'm not implying that he's not professional.
I mean, football wise, no doubt. He's smart enough to realize what to do. I think some of the quirky stuff, wearing shorts and
you hate him wearing shorts.
Calling out ESPN guys. Obviously, that would go away being a professional and being dealing with pros. But I mean, football wise, you can't argue with what he's done. You talk about a guy who's adapted to what he has and what he can recruit.
Yeah, does more with less.
That's incredible. But I would look at more guys ahead of him. You know, that are older. As far as you know, just for example, Brian Kelly. You know, I think Brian Kelly would translate to the NFL. More than a Pat Fitzgerald.
I'm not saying Kelly wouldn't, but I'd think more along the lines of the younger offensive-minded people, the Lincoln Rileys of the world, the Jason Days of the world, Jason Day.
Ryan Day.
Jason Day is a golfer who lives in Columbus. Or Cleveland.
Not related, though.
No, it's Columbus.
It is Columbus. I had it right.
Yeah,
I had the name wrong and the city wrong. I screwed the whole thing up. Anyway, Jason Day plays golf and is in Columbus. There you go. Because his wife's from there. I think he met her at the memorial.
Correct. I think Jim Furyk introduced them.
There you go. He met his wife at the memorial. This is just some inside
golf. Where do they have the good milkshakes?
Really good milkshakes at Muirfield. Right. That's where I met Vrabel years ago, who was wearing the Muirfield blazer on the range because he was a member and he was just petrified to do anything wrong. It was the most hysterical thing in the world. I don't buy that. I'm telling you, he's standing there sweating like an animal with a dip in on the range, and he's afraid to do anything wrong. And I'm like, bro, you're Mike Vrabel, like a world champion from the Patriots. They're happy to talk to you. He's like, I don't want to. I'm like, relax, buddy. You're fine.
That was gonna be my follow-up was, did he have a dip in?
1,000% he had it. It was the sun was out. He was standing up. It was a wait.
He said the only reason he started dipping is because he met Van Pelt at the Muirfield, and Van Pelt was dipping.
I'm not a dipper. Not a dipper. All right. Before we go, we have to talk about a story that we're totally ill-equipped to talk about, but it's the most interesting thing that's going on in the world today.
I even know about it.
Hey, hold on. Let's handle the topic this way. Here's Stanford Steve trying to explain to you what's going on with GameStop. Go.
There's people in a Reddit room that are outsmarting and giving the business to hedge fund guys.
That's pretty much it. That's pretty much an accurate statement. GameStop, which, as we know, is in a way, it feels a bit like sort of a Blockbuster Video, sort of a not an outdated idea, but you can think GameStop was always right next to the Blockbuster, right?
Yep.
And then the technology evolved to the point that Blockbuster goes away. But GameStop, very popular, rent games, things of that nature. And there was a hedge fund guy that had shorted the hell out of GameStop, meaning, Steve, explain short selling.
I'll let you handle this one.
Okay. Stock's at 10. You buy it at 10, but you short it. So if it goes to 1, you make the money off of the difference. And they're betting on it going to 0. But what happened with this Reddit room, and see, this is what happened because it was GameStop. I think people made this assumption that it was a bunch of younger kids that play video games, the cliche about, oh, in your mom's basement, which, by the way, is the way people used to talk in our business about the blogosphere. And then they in many ways have reshaped this business of how media goes. I mean, they've become giants and stars in their own right. And they used to, you know, years ago, people would sort of pat them on the head and talk about your mom's basement. So the idea that this Reddit room was mom's basement, well, there's a bunch of billionaires or at least multimillionaires now because they figured out this short squeeze where if they drove up the price of this, they were going to crush these hedge fund guys. Now, the part that I don't get is why did they hate these hedge fund guys? Was it a specific, because I read a long story and I don't want to bore people with the details, but it's like the guy that ran this hedge fund that was very successful wasn't like a big sort of target. Like he wasn't out there running his mouth and trying to drag people or be, you know, just gaudy and gross about it. No, he just kind of just produced, but they decided, no, hey buddy, we're going to stick it to you. And every 12 bucks the stock goes up, you're losing $1 billion. This stock was like 10, 15, 20 bucks a couple weeks ago. Today, as we speak, GameStop is up 170 bucks. It was as high today as $380 a share. It was 20 bucks 2 weeks ago. So these Reddit guys, and here's really where the, like, we'll stop talking about it because my grasp of understanding is pretty much what I've told you. Steve's grasp of understanding is what he's told you. I just want to say this to the Reddit guys. How about a shout to your boys, to Steve and me? Like, how do we not get the heads up on this? We could be laughing, Steve. We pull our money together.
What was the guy he threw 53,000 in?
I saw some tweets about, yeah, somebody put 53,000 and he was up to like $23 million. And I don't know if the math on that checks out, but because there's like option plays that gets complicated. But then let's just keep it really simple. Let's say 2 weeks ago you had $1,000. Excuse me, you had $20,000 and you were able to buy 1,000 shares. Well, today you have $370,000. Well, add a zero if you're able to buy $200,000 worth of it. But the thing that's the most interesting is that the old money guys, the guys that the hedge fund guys, the TV types, like from CNBC, I saw some CNBC guy today was like all irate that the little guy won. Well, all of the rest of these people, there's a fund, it's called Robin Hood Fund, like the little guy's winning. And like, why can't the little guy win? Why has it got to be the hedge fund guys that win?
Did you get in on any?
No. Robin Hood trading is what it is. I called it like Robin Hood trading.
Commission, you know what Robin Hood investing. Used to do?
Rob from the rich and give to the poor.
Apparently AMC and BlackBerry are now also watching their stock go up.
Yes, they are. Those are among the others. AMC.
AMC, that, like the movie theater?
Yeah.
AMC today opened at AMC today opened. Well, actually, it opened at 20. It closed at $5 yesterday. It hit 20 today. So you just, you know, quadruple your dough in a day. BlackBerry, which we all had BlackBerries, but then that technology sort of got lapped. BlackBerry's up $7 today. You know, we did have a good friend.
Did you ever have a BlackBerry?
Of course I did. Who didn't?
I never did.
Really? You didn't?
Yeah.
In our text chain yesterday, Steve, one of our friends said, yeah, BlackBerry tomorrow. It's up $7 today.
Apparently, Steve Cohen, the Mets new owner, is involved in this, and Mets fans are worried that somehow he's going to not spend as much money on the team going forward.
Well, because, and again, this is where I get out of my depth, but because he, I guess, has some exposure here to one of these hedge funds and gave some money to them to keep them afloat. And all that money got eaten up yesterday by what happened. So Met fans that are maybe also Redditors are like, oh, this is cool. I just made $5 million. Oh, now our owner that we all love doesn't have any money because we just in one day buying GameStop bankrupted him. I probably got a lot of this wrong. It's the story that's captivating everybody because at its core, whether the specifics of the story we got right or wrong, at its core, it's about billion-dollar hedge fund guys who are able to game the game and do that get absolutely bludgeoned by a subreddit chain that's now Robin Hood. They're just taking – it's Scrooge McDuck. They're taking out cartoon bags full of gold, and good for them. Good for them. I'm just mad, like – I'm mad I didn't buy BlackBerry on a recommendation today. I'm really upset about the GameStop train I missed. We're all in the same boat. 1,000 years ago, there was a Ponzi scheme that came through the dorms at Maryland, Steve. It was called the plane game.
Oh.
And it was your classic pyramid. You're a pilot at the top. There's two co-pilots. Then there's four something else and then eight at the bottom. You come in with the eight. You give your 125, that goes to the people above you. The pilot cashes out. You move up, you move up, you move up. And one weekend at Maryland, this thing overtook the campus, the plane game. And the Monday morning of the student newspaper called the Diamondback, it just said, hundreds duped in plane scam. And there's this picture of this pyramid on the front of the newspaper. And all of my friends were in on it. And I think I made it up to like pilot, but I didn't cash out because we didn't have eight more idiots to join the plane game. So there's a lot of people out there that are gonna end up buying the GameStop here that you're not gonna make it to pilot, so to speak. You know what I mean? But man, there's a whole bunch of people that cashed out and made a bunch of dough, and good for them. Okay. Good talk. GameStop. if there's ever anything else, you know,
let us know.
Yeah, AMC. I think it looks like we missed AMC.
Nobody could even get Steve a copy of NCAA 14, right? So,
I got copies.
Someone did send you a copy. I was gonna say, that's surprising that you didn't.
I'll tell you what, they were great. I needed a new controller. I got it in like a couple days.
GameStop.
Right at the beginning of the pandemic. Yeah, good job by their customer service.
That's a good company.
Yeah.
It was a $20 company last week, and now it's $370. They're like worth, what are they? What's their market cap? Like Microsoft? Steve, what's market cap mean?
Pass. Can I use a lifeline?
Says market on it.
Can I use a lifeline?
Steve, on the spot. This has been SV Pod. Have a good week.